conference and networking event for professional women in the marine sector was held in Dunleary. It marked World Maritime Day 2019. It's good news to say that a growing number of women have been coming involved in the marine sector in recent years. Lorna Siggins went along to the conference.
A boys' shed became a women's shed at the Commissioner's of Irish Lights in Dunleary, County Dublin, several weeks back when Navigation Boys were moved out for a World Maritime Day conference on empowering women in the marine. About 160 women working in various sectors of the Irish industry, ranging from master mariners to meteorologists, scientists and seafood specialists, registered for the event, and keynote speakers included Irish Lights Chief Executive Yvonne Shields O'Connor, Sea Fisheries Protection Authority Chair Susan Steele, offshore sailor Joan Malloy, and Julie Ascoop, Associate Director of Arup Engineering. Among the many participants were not one but two women who have worked as harbour masters. I asked one of them, Captain Katrina Dowling, formerly harbour master in Warren Point, County Down, if she had any reservations about coming to a women-only event.
No, absolutely not. In fact, I was kind of excited about it because working in a male-dominated industry for most of my life, I was actually kind of relishing the idea of seeing what the experience would be like to be just surrounded by females for the day. My first trip to sea and my first experience of the marine stems all the way back to a trip that I did on the Asgard when I was just 16 years old. And there I met another girl who was also 16 or 17, and she was on the Asgard taking a trip the same as myself as a trainee. And she told me that there was a career where you could learn to navigate ships and go to sea. And it really resonated with me, and it kind of inspired me. And I'm glad to say we've stayed in touch all these years and we're very, very close friends. But it also kickstarted my career and led me to go and investigate further, and actually was the course that I chose to study and future develop my career with. I studied for 1 year in CIT, and then I was very lucky to get sponsorship by Trinity House, which is actually another General Lighthouse Authority, of which we're part, Irish Lights are part of the Tri-GLA. And they offered sponsorship to help me to finance my studies in my second year. And they also gave me the opportunity to work for several different shipping companies and experience different sectors within shipping. So I worked on survey vessels, I worked on buoy tenders for lighthouses, I sailed a transatlantic on a tall ship with people with disabilities. I worked on general cargo vessels, and then finally at the end of that training I had the opportunity to work on board a cruise ship with P&O, and that's where I really found my passion. And so when I returned to college in my third year, we had actually just built the National Maritime College of Ireland, and I was lucky enough to be in one of the first graduating classes from the new college. And when I finished and I qualified as a deck officer, I was then accepted by Carnival Corporation, which is a large cruise organisation, to work firstly on P&O Australia vessels and as a third officer, then P&O UK, and I also worked with Princess Cruises. And I did world voyages on board the QE2, and thoroughly enjoyed my time working with the cruise industry. I decided to go back to college, and I finished a higher level degree in nautical science. And at that stage, I became a master mariner, qualifying as a captain in the Merchant Navy. I then returned back to sea, but this time on short sea voyages, working for Stena, firstly on the Dublin to Holyhead ferry and later on Belfast Cairn Ryan ferry. And it was there that I experienced Belfast, and I had started to study a master's program in ship operations management at that stage through Southampton Solent University. And I had the opportunity to become first assistant harbour master for Belfast Harbour, and was later promoted to the deputy harbour master of Belfast. And then the opportunity came to take my own harbour in the port of Warren Point. And I worked there for 3 years. And I have just recently taken on this new role within Irish Lights as the Navigation Service Manager here, managing the marine team in Irish Lights.
Katrina Dowling's 16-year-old friend, who also pursued a career at sea, is Captain Deirdre Lane. And I asked her how she came to be master of all sea surveys in her home harbour of Dunmore East in County Waterford.
My uncle was heavily involved in the Naval Service Reserve in Waterford, and he used to take me up to the lookout point at Shannoon in Dunmore East, and we'd look out to sea, we'd look at the ships, and we'd look across at Hookhead Lighthouse. And later I learned to row, as a Sea Scout, I learned to row the BP-18 in Dunmore East Harbour. the main thing for me was a trip on Asgard, the sail training vessel Asgard. A stint on there confirmed that a career at sea was for me. There's so many women in that room today, as we were talking at break time, that Asgard triggered a career at sea for them. And not just women, men, anyone at sea in Ireland. In 1999, I started at nautical science studies at the old CIT, which is now the NMCI Maritime College. I was lucky enough in that I secured sponsorship from Northern Marine Management. They're a subsidiary of Stena. I sailed on various tankers, ro-ros, and then I went sailing on tall ships Stavros Niarchos and Prince William, who Northern Marine also manage. So I sailed on those vessels for a few years, got to visit some amazing countries, got to meet some great people. And then in 2007, I made the move to Irish Lights, to Grania Whale, where I sailed as second officer. Now, Irish Lights was very appealing to me, beautiful coastal scenery, lighthouses, the professionalism associated with Irish Lights was all very appealing to me. So I was delighted to come to Irish Lights and get the job. I eventually worked my way up to chief mate on Grania Whale. And then I came ashore into the office to work as marine assistant. And then there was a new organisational restructure, and I worked as navigation policy in Irish Lights. It was a role that I absolutely loved, and I got to represent Irish Lights at various international forums and events. So after 11 very happy years with Irish Lights, the job came up at Dunmore East, and I was appointed harbour master there in April 2018. So I've had a very exciting few years. I've had two summers so far, so it's a very busy spot. It's strategically located at the entrance to Waterford Estuary. Summertime is particularly busy there. It is a fisheries harbour, a busy little fisheries harbour, but in addition to that, it also caters for leisure industry, and also in recent years they've had an increased number of cruise vessel calls. It is a cruise ship tender port, so we get some 12 calls a year at Dunmore East.
Right. And do you have to wear the uniform and the cap and the whole lot?
I have the uniform. I'm very used to wearing a uniform. It was actually a strange one for me because in Irish Lights it was suits and stuff, and then I've come back to uniform. So I actually opened up my old Grania Whale bag, and the white shirts and the black trousers are back out, and I have the full uniform for special occasions as well. I suppose I've never thought about being the only woman. I would have always been pretty much the only woman when I started out in my cadetship. But then as more and more females came through, I did sail with other women, particularly on the Grania Whale. And then when I came ashore also to Irish Lights, there were also women that I worked with as well. So I've had a good mix. I've had a good mix of mentorship. I've worked with some great people, both men and women. But it's exciting. It's not like a normal desk job. Every day is different.
Empowering women was the theme, and there were afternoon sessions on professional development. But it struck me there was already oceans of experience in that boy shed, shared by the likes of solo sailor Joan Malloy, senior UCC lecturer Val Cummins, Lieutenant Commander Roberta O'Brien of the Naval Service, and Karen Dubsky of Coastwatch, who told me she did have some qualms initially about attending.
I was thinking twice of whether I should go because I've got 50 other things to do at the moment. But it was just so inspiring, and I don't normally go to anything networky. And this was just so exciting. So many women who had some brilliant ideas, some things I thought, yeah, I could do that. Or there's so-and-so who I've been hearing about for ages, and there they are, walking into the room.
Great. And you have been working in the marine sector as an environmentalist for a long time. Have you ever come across gender bias?
I have. I have had men asking me, particularly when my children were small, what I was doing, or rather, who was looking after my children. And I have had men say, if you weren't a woman, I would now swear. And various other simple things which you could deal with. It's more the indirect, where they don't say it to your face, but it has also helped. Sometimes as a woman, you can say pretty please with sugar on it in such a way that it's difficult for them to say no.
What are you up to now at the moment?
First of all, our Coastwatch survey is on, and we'd love loads and loads and loads of people to go out onto the coast. Also involved in the Maritime Spatial Plan and the advisory group, the minister, and I think this is a huge opportunity to really do what is so overdue for the marine environment. Sort of on a most immediate, yesterday we were in the High Court to try and ensure that we could have a full hearing of whether appropriate assessments are needed for razor shell dredging in near protected areas. I think most of all, it's the love for the marine environment. I sometimes, for sanity, I would go when the light is fading, where the winkles are, and just listen to them going click, click, everything moving. My own children loving the shore. So many young people who I have facilitated in their discovery of the shores. And this feeling of we could wreck this. I could be part of the generation which has wrecked our marine environment. Climate change is happening now. We are seeing there are areas which have gone anaerobic with the heat and the high nutrient content. And we need to do something about that. Just now, I think we have a chance. We have a first maritime special plan happening. We have enough people waking up. We have enough fishermen and other planners, county council planners, who are really thinking wisely. We just need to not just network as women, but network as people who are willing to look a little bit further and willing to stick their noses out and do something for the marine environment.
Finally, Yvonne Shields O'Connor, Irish Lights chief executive and host of a very successful event, explained how it all came about and why it may not be women only next time round.
So this year, World Maritime Day, the key theme is empowering women in the marine. And earlier in the year, myself and a couple of female colleagues got together and said maybe we might organise an event to mark World Maritime Day this year. And we'd reach out to some of our female colleagues in the sector. As we pooled our contacts, we realised that actually there's a huge number of women working in the marine sector. So the numbers kept going up, 100, 200, 300, 400, over 450 women we identified working in fairly senior roles across the sector. So we felt if we were to organise an event which was going to be attractive to those women who are all presumably extremely busy and indeed working right around the country, right around the coast, north and south, that we'd have to try and pull together a more substantive event. So we said we'd organise a conference, and that's the conference that we held today in Irish Lights. And we started the day by talking about the environment, in fact, you know, and the importance of the sea and the oceans to our very existence in the first instance, and then to us as an island economy in Ireland. We looked at the value of the sector, both in terms of its direct and indirect value. We talked about the traditional aspects of the sector, so shipping and aquaculture and fisheries, tourism, and then we talked about some of the emerging industries, so the renewable energy sector, the technology sector, the biotech sector. And it was really interesting because there were women working in all of these areas. So it was absolutely fascinating to hear the kind of diverse roles that people were playing and the kind of challenges and opportunities that they felt were in the sector. And then we talked a little bit about diversity and why diversity matters, you know, and the importance of inclusion, not just in terms of women and gender issues, but in terms of bringing people into the sector that have different backgrounds, different educational backgrounds, bringing in young people to the sector, you know, and bringing in people who are not necessarily Irish, but I think 17% of the population are now foreign nationals. So, you know, we talked about all those issues and diversity in its broadest sense. So I think we will probably have another event, some more events. There may be mixed events where we discuss these topics. And I suspect that we'll build on some of the excellent events that are happening anyway. Probably maybe next year at SeaFest we might see an event that's looking at diversity in its broadest sense.
Lorna Siggins reporting for us from the Professional Women in Marine Conference. The RTE Radio 1 programme Sunday Miscellany has been on air since 1968. And now a celebratory anthology has been published with new writing and photographs, including many from the RTE Stills archives. 50 contributors took a year each between 1968 and the present. The poet John F. Dean had the year 2015, and his contribution is called The Sea, the Sea. And here's that piece.
We would sit sometimes late evenings in the kitchen of the old house, Bunnacurry, Achill Island, listening to storms gathering off the Atlantic. Granny would weep because her son, ship's engineer, would be out on the high seas. The winds howled in the chimney and filled the kitchen with sorry apprehension. But other times, on a warm summer day, we swam in the sheltered cove in Duiga, where Granny would lean her old back against a rock and allow the small waves to caress her feet. Mother held me carefully, her hands under my back, urging me to float, to trust the sea to bear me up. And when I overcame my fear of the waves and the jellyfish, I abandoned myself with delight to the experience. And so I came to respect and wonder at the dangers and vastness of the sea, and at the potency of a love that held me safe. Father, too, urged us on to things of the sea. We fished alongside him, spinning from the rocks at the base of cliffs, where we sometimes were in danger of being carried away by a freak, high-flying wave. The sea, the sea. I read in Isaiah these words, "They lift up their voices, they sing for joy, they shout from the west over the majesty of the Lord. Therefore, in the east, give glory to the Lord. In the islands of the sea, glorify the name of the Lord." The sea, then, has ghosted my living, with its moods, its power, its sources of innocent pleasures. And later on, when I saw my father stand by the ocean in his old age, aware of the diminishments that the years can bring to the human frame, I sorrowed to see how he longed to, but could not, go in for a swim. I watched him as, slightly embarrassed, he took off shoes and socks, rolled up his trousers to the knees, paddled his foam-white legs in the lesser waves of the great ocean. So much, then, of sea and sky and island has left its call in my flesh and soul that I come always to the shore to scavenge for some understanding. Around me, the black-back gulls watch, sharp-eyed and silent, shuffling on the stones or along the strand, like monks restless in choir. In September 2015, I went with my wife Ursula to the island of Crete. The holiday crowds were already leaving, and we found a sheltered bay and swam in the clear, warm water of the Mediterranean. Crete, too, holds its memories of the sad histories of man's inhumanity to man. In the monastery at Arcady, only three monks remain, the rich Catholicon holding relics of the priest's resistance to the Ottomans many centuries ago. In the dim church, we knelt, praying for the new century unfolding in its outlandish ways, knowing at times how we are halt, how we butt against the limitations of our hopes. But there was still an aftertaste of summer. The harbour was musical with the tinkling bells of yachts and the silver trumpet sparkle of the sun. In another Orthodox monastery, Preveli, hung between earth and heaven, among the scorched, bare-knuckle mountains of Crete, there are memorials to warrior monks who smuggled their allied soldiers down precipitous cliffs to the sea to escape the Nazi onslaught, church militant. The monks still hold the fortress for their god and live in dusty black. Like eagles, they soar on the mountain flanks, the sea far below them, innocent in a heavenly blue. And then, that evening, we sat on the terrace of a restaurant, watching out over the gentlest of seas, enjoying a warm Cretan red wine. Earlier that day, I had taken off my shoes and socks, rolled up my trouser legs, and waded cautiously in the shallower water, embarrassed at the foam-white smoothness of my legs. We saw on television the body of a three-year-old boy lying face down on a beach, lost at sea in his family's flight from the wars in Syria. Alan Kurdi, refugee. Red T-shirt, short-sleeved. Navy blue shorts, shoes, navy blue. The Mediterranean appeared to have repented of its wildness and carried that small body on its back, gently ashore. He lay face down on the wet shingles. And how shall we forgive? How shall we be forgiven? The sea, it holds within itself so much of our human folly and misery. And if we, unhurried, pause a while to listen down by the shore, we may hear that child, and so many more, drawing in a long, slow sigh, then a quiet out-breathing, and a pause before, once more, that long, slow sigh.
John F. Dean. And you'll find that anthology of Sunday Miscellany in a book called Miscellany 50, edited by Cleananí Aulún. It's in all bookshops. In the last couple of years or so, the tiny Bullock Harbour in Dalkey in Dublin has hardly been out of the news, as developers have made several attempts to build large apartment blocks there in the face of stiff local opposition. Our regular contributor, Hugh Oram, has this report.
Bullock Harbour has been a quiet, undisturbed inlet on the approach to Dalkey village in South County Dublin for over 200 years. But recently that long ongoing tranquility has been overturned as local residents have reacted angrily to a plan to build luxury villas and apartments facing right onto the harbour. The company behind the project is the Bartra Capital Property Group, and some time ago it announced plans for the luxury development on a 0.6 hectare site right beside the harbour. The plans include a new south-facing cafe as well as a new public square. And for anyone buying one of these proposed developments, the company has said they will get stunning all-round views over the harbour and out to sea. Residents will be able to make the most of these sea views from rooftop terraces. And Bartra claims that the development would enhance the area around Bullock Harbour. Last July, An Bord Pleanála approved planning permission for the development, and this announcement incensed local residents even more. The Bullock Harbour Preservation Association says that the news of this planning decision had been greeted with amazement, disbelief and outrage by people living in the area as they reacted to the planning decision. And the association began an immediate fundraising campaign so they could apply for a judicial review of the decision. The Save Bullock Harbour campaign has been very vigorous and determined in its bid to save the traditional harbour from what it regards as an unwanted and intrusive development. One of the objectors to the plan has been singer Christy Moore, who lives locally and who has said that the planned development would damage the amenity value of the harbour for sailing, swimming, fishing, walking and regular recreation. He has also expressed concerns for wildlife and the ecosystem of the area. Another well-known local resident who has objected is broadcaster Pat Kenny. It's all a far cry from the peace that reigned over the harbour for countless decades since it was built in the early 19th century, just over 200 years ago. Its construction had slightly preceded that of the great harbour at Kingstown, now Dunlera. And for much of the 19th century, Bullock Harbour was used as a commercial port, with ships unloading coal and stone there. These materials were either used locally or they were sent on by ship to Dublin Port. And in more recent times, the harbour has been widely used by yachts and other small sailing craft. During the 1940s and 1950s, the most popular boats in the harbour were yawls and punts. And it's now still one of the very few places in the Dublin area where you can rent a small boat by the hour. The harbour thrived over the years, despite a couple of major obstacles. Whenever a nor'easterly gale blows in winter, the harbour becomes unusable, with surges of water flowing in and out of the entrance to the harbour. and in such conditions, waves breaking on the seaward side of the pier can rise to spectacular heights. The other disadvantage of Bullock Harbour is a rock that's about 100 metres out to sea from the pier, easily seen during spring tides, but very hard to spot at other times of the year. Despite all these disadvantages, the harbour has long been used by local fishermen and boating enthusiasts, and the harbour long had a series of huts known as the Fishermen's Huts. And the harbour also hosted the Dorky Swimming Club, set up in the late 1930s and which survived until 20 years ago. Dorky's unusual because it actually has two harbours, the other one, Collymore Harbour, on the Collymore Road on the southern side of the village, is much smaller than Bullock Harbour but is of similar vintage. It's used by small boats making the crossing to Dorky Island. But of all the trials and tribulations that have affected Dorky's two harbours over the past two centuries, none have surpassed the local anger that has greeted the current development plans for Bullock Harbour.
Hugh Oram.